listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are counting down the days until training camp. Training camp 2019, Road to Redemption. Today's question, how will Vic Fangio run his first camp? Before we get to that, I just want to keep you in the loop. The Rockies are getting nobody. Absolutely bludgeoned. Like seal clubbed. 8-0. Top of the third. One out.
Hey.
The Giants still just tattooing Herman Marquez.
Oh.
Now, buddy.
Third inning, 8-0. I mean, that's just.
Buddy's
what do you
out
think
there
he's telling them right now. Dude, are you still sleeping? Like, what's going on? Why do you stink so bad today?
Should have asked me for a greenie if you needed one. No? Well, greenies, remember? In a bowl in the locker room? Popping like amphetamines.
Oh.
Like all through the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Oh. I don't remember all that.
No. I don't know what's up with them. You just told me during the break Marquez shut down the Giants the last time he faced them.
I think it was the last time he faced them. They showed the highlights of the game, like not complete game. I think it was a one hitter, something like that, or maybe it was last year he did. I don't know, but they were showing a highlight from a great start against the Giants.
Yeah, this isn't how they drew it up. And I wonder if Bud Black will get, and I suggested this when they were down 3-0. I said, if they get to a certain point in the game where they're getting clubbed and you know you have to play tonight, do you just say, white flag, we'll split with you by midnight tonight, we'll split with you and try to get two of the next two?
Yeah, white flag as in, you know, your relievers are going to be, here comes Tony Walters
in
as one of your relievers, that kind of white flag.
Mm.
So, I mean, you're getting close to it, but it's still only the third inning. That's it. I mean, it's 8-0, but this is Colorado.
It is.
Ball flies.
It is. All right, we'll keep you up to speed as things continue to unravel here. All right, Vic Fangio, his first training camp. That's our question of the day as we count down until Thursday. We talked about Vance Joseph in his first training camp. It looked a little bit out of sorts. He even said that. He said he didn't know where he was supposed to be. Kind of trembling, not kind of. He was trembling when he was talking to the media. What are your expectations from Vic Fangio? And can we see anything over the next handful of days that would be an indicator that he's on the right track?
I expect to see a coach run a tough camp, as tough as you can get these days. Like, you can't really run a tough camp. There's no more 2 days. It's only one practice a day. Then you have a walkthrough. There's limited time that you can be in the building and meeting. All those things are very, very restrictive. And so there's only so much you can do. But I think he runs it probably as tough as you can run it. I think that's probably the way it should be. You know, you got to get back to, you know, when you've lost the last couple of years, you need to do things differently and you need to be a better football team. And part of football, you know, is going out there and grinding and hitting and just being a tough football team. And so I think we see more of a tougher camp than we've seen for sure the last couple of years.
And can you, if you don't mind, point to one or two different things that would suggest that toughness?
I think more when you look at more full go.
Okay.
More when you have the pads on. You heard Vance talk about it a lot. You don't want to get guys injured, right? And certainly that's a concern as the Giants just put another one on the board.
Mm.
9-0.
Now 9-0 in the third.
But, you know, certainly you don't want to get guys hurt, but some coaches, I remember Mike Tomlin a couple years ago, I mean, they hit like every day. Every day they could put full pads, they were going live, they were hitting. I mean, it was a tough physical camp. And so when I say that, I look at more live stuff, more physical stuff, more. Not saying, you know, you're going to be going live against wide receivers, but more in the trenches, offensive and defensive linemen.
Sure.
Tackling running backs to the ground, doing goal line, short yardage, a lot of that stuff that maybe we didn't see quite as much in the past. I think Vic Fangio brings that style back.
Okay.
And I think he should.
And more of that blue collar.
Yeah. I think he should. Now, you always look at, I mean, injuries happen. And certainly when you hit more and you're tackling to the ground more, that could be a possibility. But it's football. Your football, you can't guard against. I mean, look how did Emmanuel Sanders tear his Achilles in practice,
right?
Just cutting, non-contact injury. It happens. So I think, especially where the Broncos have been, and you're trying to set the tone, it should be a tough, hard-nosed training camp. Because let's be real, even those don't even compare to what it used to be. So it's still not even bad because it's only one practice.
Right.
And then you have a little walkthrough, and I mean, so even those aren't that bad.
Who ran the toughest training camp that you were ever a part of that had those elements that you're talking about that we might be getting a sneak peek this week?
Well, I was fortunate in Baltimore. I think I told you that Brian Billick was there and Ted Marchabrota was there before, and you know, guys are quitting.
That's right.
During training camp because it was so hard. And Brian Billick brought the style in of where we would practice in the morning. We'd have a 2-a-day practice, and the next day we would have a practice in the morning, then a special teams practice. So that was like revolutionary at that time. I mean, people were like, the players were like, this is unbelievable. Let me tell you how good you got it, youngster. Right? I mean, that was that style. It was still tough. I mean, you're talking about two practices on a Monday, and then Tuesday you wake up early, you got to practice, and then that afternoon was nice, unless you were on special teams. Then you were, you know, if you weren't on any special teams, you didn't have to go to it. So, I mean, that wasn't that hard with the Colts. I would say Tony Dungy, it was tough. More so, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another one.
Mm-hmm.
Another run.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say Tony Dungy ran a tough training camp or was, like, really hard. I mean, he wasn't a pushover by any means, but playing with Peyton Manning was a son of a gun. You know, you get out there and you just, it's tough. It's tough.
You're talking about like maintaining your focus for the whole time?
No, just like constant. Let's go. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's do this. You know, I mean, it wasn't any, you know, half speed stuff or just, there was none of that. So probably my time in Indy with Peyton Manning were probably the toughest because we just ran and ran and ran and ran and then run some more. And, you know, it's hot and humid in Indiana in the summertime. And so those were tough.
Speaking of not going half speed, I saw your reaction on Twitter to a video that Emmanuel Sanders posted. What did you see that had you so impressed, and what could it mean for the Broncos just this week? We'll dive into it next. All right, so at the tail end of last week, Emmanuel Sanders posted a workout video. Not the first one, but it's the most recent one. He posted it to Twitter and Instagram. And by the way, the Rockies are down 12-0. He posted this video.
Two touchdowns and a missed extra, extra point.
That's right. They put up a Broncos offense number in the first three innings. I saw your reaction on Twitter, and I don't have it pulled up right now, but it was very complimentary, and you were like kind of like, wow. Like, look at this. And you and I just watched the video here in studio during the break.
I said, he's ready, looks great, wow.
He's ready.
Looks great,
wow.
Wow.
What did you see in that video that was so impressive to you?
The change of direction. That stood out right away, right? He was going left and back right, and he had that little like cone set up or whatever it was. And so you see the change of direction, which is a big deal, obviously, if you're playing wide receiver. What do you look like changing direction, especially coming off this Achilles injury? Looked great. I mean, looked great. And then the end of it was, you know, he goes right, left, right, and then he sticks his foot in the ground and gets vertical. And I was like, wow. Wow, I mean, and I asked you because I wanted to see what the answer would be and what you would say. And I said, you know, which one is it? What Achilles did he hurt? And you're like, I don't know. And I'm like, that's my point. You can't tell because I don't know which one it is. And you watch the video, You can't tell which one he injured. He looks totally fine. And when I watched that video a month or two ago, where a lot of people said he looked really good, I said, I just see a little bit, it wasn't bad, but there was a little giddy up there where it just didn't look like Emmanuel yet. Which at the time I said that there's nothing wrong with that. He's still got a couple months or a month, whatever it is, to get going. And I watch this video and I say, he's looks completely, I don't see anything there. No hesitation, saying this guy looks, he looks great. There was no limp at all. There was no giddy up in the, and getting in and out of breaks or anything like that. He just looked, it looked like he, you know, did last year at this time to me. Saying all that, you still have a plan in place for him. You don't just say, training camp's here, let's go. You know, you're full go and you don't have a plan in place to monitor his reps, his snap counts, all those things throughout the course of camp.
So the coaches and training staff aren't, and this is sounds kind of backward or counterintuitive, they're not going to react to what they're seeing. They're going to stay firm on what the initial plan was, whether he is 100% or 95%. Like, look, you're telling us you're 100%. It looks like you're 100%, but.
Right. That's being smart, you know, because obviously he's a big part of your offense. And you still got to realize, when's the last guy time this guy's put pads on? It was when he got hurt. When's the last time he put a helmet on? It was when he got hurt. So you don't want to all of a sudden just throw him out there blindly and say, and just treat him like you would Tim Patrick and just take as many reps as you can. You're our starter. You're ready to go. Let's go. I think that would be unfair. And then that's when you see other issues come up. And we want Emmanuel Sanders fresh and ready to go first game of the season. I could care less about Thursday if he's out there taking every single rep. Now, obviously, you know, you need to practice and you need to get work in, and even a veteran needs that to get some of that rust off of you. And I think you'll be able to do that, but you just got to monitor him. I mean, I don't think you got to baby him, but, you know, maybe he'll go a day and then have the next day off. Maybe he'll go 2 days and, you know, monitor the reps and take, you know, just do a lot of, like he said, he, I remember when he was talking, he said he might do just individual early on and do those things, which is perfect. Let's just slowly work him back into football shape and getting ready to go for the season.
I like it. This is the first time that we've gotten a glimpse of some real football movement. And I know the last video he posted, like you said, a month ago, he was moving full speed. But that's pretty much all we've seen. Like, we've seen the treadmill videos, full speed.
Yeah.
We saw the hyperbaric chamber video, full speed. He's running on the, you know, stand-up straight fake treadmill that goes off your movement, full speed. We even saw him during OTAs on the Broncos practice facility running full speed in cleats. But this is the first time that we've seen him plant, go. So yeah, it's encouraging. It's encouraging. And this is just like another like bullet point of validation that Emmanuel Sanders is going to be ready for week one, barring something unforeseen.
Right.
I just can't see how this guy right now, who on July 15th, and this is even a handful of days ago, looks like this. He's going to be ready to go.
When you watch it, do you walk away impressed? I mean, like, you watch it, if you didn't know he had an injury, you couldn't say this guy tore his Achilles 8 months ago.
No, I would not be able to say that. And I'm watching it again right now as we're having the conversation. Go back to your point. You said, which one did he tear? And I was like, thought you were asking me that for the point of reference for the conversation. And it was the left one. It was the left one. But again, to your point, I wouldn't have been able to tell. If you quiz me and put me on the spot, wouldn't have been able to tell. So yeah, I'm wildly encouraged, man. And what this means, like the domino for this offense, I don't think, can be overstated. I really don't. I think it's so important for Flacco. I think it's important for Sutton. I think it's important for Fant. I think it's important for Rich Gangarello. Like, he is a lightning rod. There's only one guy that is like him.
Yep.
On this roster. That's it. And he may be the most dynamic offensive player that we have.
You know, offensively, you look at two guys, Philip Lindsay and Emmanuel Sanders as those guys that can just be game wreckers. And anytime they get the football in their hands, they got a chance to take it the distance. Big play capabilities. And I envision Courtland Sutton to be one of those guys this year also. But you need him. You need him in the lineup. Your offense is different with him than obviously if you don't have him and he's not healthy. So I think the plan needs to be put in place, and you just take him along slowly throughout the course of camp and get him ready for week one against Oakland.
The Rockies are getting shelled right now.
Yeah.
It's 12-0 at the end of the third. 12 runs against a team who is up against our alleged top guy. I don't want to call him an ace because it hasn't quite played like an ace. But this is arguably the worst offense in all of the National League that has 12 runs on the board after three innings. And during the break, I'm going to go back and look, and I just found it right now. I guess it was on July 4th that they scored a 12 or more when they scored 13. But you're talking, that is the only instance all year long already after three where they've scored 12 or more. I guess maybe the third instance against the Rockies earlier in the season. Wow. All right. Here's an interesting question. It was based off a conversation that we heard this morning on the Safety Blitz. What's the most overrated aspect of the Broncos right now? Details next. Stoke, is there an overrated aspect to the Denver Broncos right now? This is a conversation that was being had on the Safety Blitz this morning between Nick Ferguson and John Davis about, you know, what's the most overrated portion or phase of this football team? Is there an individual player or unit that stands out at potentially being overrated?
Overrated. I can't think of anything that I would say this team is overrated. Now, the only thing, because for me, if you're overrated, you got to think highly of this group or this individual. And there's nobody on the Broncos that I think I feel highly about that is overrated, that doesn't deserve it. Or I wouldn't think highly about him. Follow me?
I follow you loud and clear.
I look at the one aspect. I mean, I'm not expecting much from this offense. So I don't think any players or in my mind overrated. I don't think the offense is overrated. The only aspect that could be overrated is defense, because I do think the defense will be good and should be good. But that's really it for me. And I look at the defensive players that I think are going to do, you know, have really good years. You look at Vaughn, Bradley Chubb, Chris Harris, and hopefully I'm holding out hope on Kareem Jackson and Bryce Callahan. But other than that, I'm not really saying this guy is going to be great this year.
I'm going to bounce one off you and Cecil Lammy, who joins us via the Jägermeister hotline. Cecil, appreciate you dropping by. Welcome back into the fold. Doing a great job in the morning. When we're talking about overrated, could there be an aspect that's overrated? I hope I'm wrong when I say this.
Don't start with that.
No, you don't. I hope
Come
I'm
on.
Wrong.
What's up, Cecil?
But there may be an overrated element to this, with the assumption that Mike Munchak alone is going to turn this offensive line around. Cecil, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I would say this. Based on what he did in Pittsburgh with a lot of undrafted free agents, now a couple of top talents, DeCastro, Pouncey, et cetera, but we all have to remember that Villanueva was a tight end at Army, you know, and Munchak developed him into a fine left tackle. So what he did taking over the Steelers offensive line in 1 year with talent that I think was lesser in terms of just natural physical talent, he turned that team around from being graded poorly as run blockers in the low 20s to being a top five graded run blocking unit. Pass protection saw a similar jump as well. So I definitely hear you, and I think that's kind of the biggest shaky part of the Denver Broncos. But if we say overrated, to me it says something that we think is good right now, but maybe not as good as we think. And for me, as painful as it is, it might be the secondary. It might be that cornerback position. I just wrote up corners for 104.3thefan.com in my training camp preview. I'm doing a deep dive. I'm watching film. I'm Lyndon Stevens last night, right? Like, I'm getting into it. And here's the thing. Not only is it the depth concern at the cornerback position, but I don't know how Bryce Callahan's going to work on the outside. Like, I know Kareem Jackson's going to play some corner, but this offseason, when he wasn't at safety, he was at nickel corner. Bryce Callahan has been outside. That's kind of the plan, even though he's a great slot corner. So for me, we know Chris Harris Jr. is going to bring it. I don't know if Bryce Callahan can work on the outside necessarily. I don't know if he can stay healthy. He's never played a full 16 games. And Kareem Jackson, I like as a corner, and I like him as a safety too, but I think kind of the need is there at corner more than there is at safety, but the Broncos seem to disagree. So for me, maybe that's the spot we could highlight.
Yeah, it's the Mike Munchak thing is interesting. I wouldn't think of more so as of coaches as I was players, but right. I agree that it could, you know, Munchak could be one of those aspects and those guys that we look at and we're just expecting them to do great things, and all of a sudden it just doesn't turn out that way, especially right away. We're looking like right away. This offense, you got to fix it, and you're gonna fix it. And I mean, that's a hard thing to do, to turn around that group pretty much overnight.
So, right, and you do it with a rookie, you do it with an inexperienced center at Connor McGovern, and it got some, you know, half a season last year, whatever the number was, but McGovern's still having a problem with low snaps. Hopefully that's cleaned up during training camp. We all can believe in Dalton Risner, still a rookie, but we all can believe in him. I think that kid's got great upside, but it comes down to the health of Ron Leary and then Garrett Bowles, because if Ron Leary's healthy, Garrett Bowles struggles, boom, Juwan James left tackle, Eli Wilkinson right tackle, you go forward. I don't know if Garrett Bowles is going to play all 16 games as the starting left tackle of the Denver Broncos. But if Ron Leary gets hurt, now Wilkinson's the right guard, and you're kind of biting your lip and going through the struggles of Garrett Bowles at left tackle. So there's like a bunch of shaky situations on that offensive line. I hope Munchak, I trust in Munchak, I hope that he can have that similar turnaround of this offensive line the way he did in Pittsburgh, but it's something we're just going to have to wait and see how it shakes out.
Yeah, I don't know if in the history of the NFL if so much hope and hype have surrounded an offensive line coach. I mean, it's just, it's really unbelievable, but hopefully it turns out to be, he turns out to do what you were talking about earlier, Cecil, what he did in Pittsburgh with that group. But I want to go get back to the secondary and specifically Kareem Jackson. I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around this guy playing safety more so than cornerback. I mean, I really thought we signed him to play corner. I like his, you know, his value obviously is being able to place a little bit of both. Right. But I mean, the way we paid him and at his age, I mean, I'm thinking corner, corner, corner. Now, obviously, like you said, he played a lot of safety in the offseason. Do you think we'll see him more at safety than corner?
Based on the offseason, yes. Now, maybe that was just them getting in some work because he's, you know, so steady and experienced at corner that he doesn't need a bunch of experience out there. Throw him in at safety, kind of work him into the mix there. And then when the season starts, he plays corner. I mean, he's listed as a corner on the official website. But when I wrote him up, again, for our website, like, I didn't put him in with the corners, just based on what we saw. And when he did play corner, it was nickel corner. And it was probably, I can count it on one hand of a bad woodshop teacher, how many times in each week of practice he got to play nickel corner. It wasn't a lot. So, you know, you look at Kareem Jackson, I love him as a corner. I think he's good as a safety, but I think this team's need at corner. Make Bryce Callahan your slot. That's what he's best at. The need is for Jackson to play outside opposite of Chris Harris. I don't know if he's necessarily going to do that all the time.
Cecil Lammy of 104.3thefan.com. I like that. I could count it on one hand of a bad woodshop teacher.
Yeah.
That's a JPP sample size right there. Cecil.
Look at y'all too.
Cecil, when you.
Things got out of control.
It's still July. It's in play.
Can I ask him one more question here? But I know you said you're writing up a piece for 104.3thefan.com on the secondary, correct?
Yeah.
Is there a sleeper there in the secondary that maybe we haven't heard about that you think we might be hearing about in the next couple of weeks, a guy that could come on the scene and obviously maybe he can take that outside corner spot next to Chris Harris, and then we can play Kareem Jackson at safety? Is there a guy, maybe under the radar guy?
Elijah Holder. the undrafted kid from Stanford. And I know what people are saying. Wait a second, undrafted. Why not? Well, Chris Harris is undrafted. Like, big deal, right? Once you get here, can you play or can you not play? And Elijah Holder, when he was at Stanford, not the fastest guy, but he can turn. And that's the thing. Like, are you athletic enough to turn your hips, get downfield? And he can. He's very smart. He puts himself in position on the ball. He has a lot of pass breakups. Like, he's a guy that's always around the play. So physically, he's big and he's physical. He's not fast, but he doesn't need to be because his hips move well, and he's also very nuanced in the way that he diagnoses plays. Plus, he's the undrafted guy. We could talk about Brett Rippon, whatever, but, like, if we say, who's the undrafted guy that makes the 53? Like the Broncos seem to do every year, to me, it's Elijah Holder.
Mm, interesting stuff. Cease Alami of 1043thefan.com. Cease, cannot wait to be out there every single day next to you, taking in training camp just 3 days from now. Absolutely super stoked for that. I know you are too. We appreciate you stopping by, and we'll, again, surely do this again soon.
Be good, fellas.
All right, Cease.
All right, Cease. Good stuff there. I got to tell you, so the score's 13-0 in the Giants Rockies game, okay? The game's on TV. I saw something I never saw before. On the television broadcast, and we can't hear them, so we're doing our own thing, but they actually took, you know how you, like, draw on the TV screen, like John Madden,
yeah,
something
Madden,
like that,
right?
Yep. Do a bunch. They took the marker that transferred to the screen and just erased out the score. It's so ugly that they just took it out for maybe a minute, minute and a half.
It was funny.
It was funny. And at this point, what can you do but laugh?
Right.
Like, this has turned into a laugher. It's 13-0 in the top of the fifth. Whew! All right. Interesting conversation about the most overrated aspect of the Broncos. If there
is, what's the most runs the Rockies have ever given up in a game? Somebody knows. Text us on the RamosLaw.com. Text 303-713-1043. We might be witnessing history today.
We very well could be.
What do you think that number would be if you had to guess?
I'd say 21.
I was going to say deuce.
Deuce?
22.
Yeah. It sounds like it's right there in that wheelhouse. Okay. We are going to sit down with the most hated man in Denver sports. And force him to defend himself. We'll do it next. Going into the break, I said we're going to talk to the most hated man in Denver sports. Yes. This is James Merrillat of 1043 The Fan.
Wait a minute. What happened while I was gone for a week?
I don't know.
They call it cutting and running. He dropped his 60 cent 60, and we got through the last batch of folks while you were on vacation. And, of course, this culminated. And I didn't know what – a couple of weeks ago when you were in here on your way out, you said – you may be surprised who's number one.
Yes.
And for a second, I said, is he going to put TD over John? MVP of a regular season, MVP of a Super Bowl. You could argue the greatest postseason running back ever. But my biggest beef up until the zenith of a controversy, you putting Elway 2 to Manning. We'll get to that in a second. My biggest beef to that point was probably you having TD out of the top five. And I know it was an abbreviated peak, but so was Peyton. And what he meant here, I thought that was, up until the final spot, that was my biggest beef moment.
Yeah, and it turns into one of those things where now it's going to sound like I'm disparaging Terrell Davis, who is one of my favorite players of all time, so I want to get that out of the way early. But you do look at it and see, okay, he had these great, great seasons, but there is the factor of, well, look what Clinton Portis did in the same offense. Two 1,500-yard seasons, his rookie year and his second year before he got traded for Champ Bailey. Look what some other fairly pedestrian running backs did in this offense behind that offensive line in Mike Anderson, Ruben Drones, Tatum Bell. The list goes on and on. They weren't near as good as TD. TD was at another level. I think Clinton Portis was. I think Clinton Portis, had he not got traded to Washington, would own every rushing record in Denver. I actually think he was... for those 2 years, slightly better than TD. TD was awesome. They don't win the Super Bowls without him. I had him at number 7. You know, it's kind of one of those things as you get feedback on it. I got a lot of heat when 6 through 10 came out because I had Gary Zimmerman at 6 and TD at 7. where I sit there and I start getting the feedback on it, and you go, I can kind of see that argument. I initially had Zimmerman higher because he was something Denver had never had. During the Elway era, he had never played behind a Pro Bowl caliber offensive lineman. Not one. Like Keith Bishop, Billy Bryan, Dave Studdard, these names that, you know, longtime Bronco fans are out there. Never even made a Pro Bowl, not one. So for the franchise to say, hey, we have to protect John, we have to build in front of him, was such a groundbreaking change for them. And then the way he played and the leadership he brought to that line that turned into a offensive line that helped him win back-to-back titles, I thought was important. But certainly TD's a top five caliber guy. He finished 7. It's not like I put him at 42. But you know, it was Peyton, it was John, it was Von Miller. Von Miller's going to be the best defensive player in the history of this franchise. And it's a team that at least the first half of their existence was basically known for their defense. So that's saying something. Champ Bailey, who was a tremendous player, and Shannon Sharp, who's a Hall of Famer. So it, you know, to not crack that top five is not exactly, doesn't mean you couldn't play. We'll put it that way.
Now we got to talk about the 1 and 2 spot. Get down to the nitty gritty. And there's no bigger fan of the Peyton Manning than myself. And even I wouldn't put Peyton Manning in front of John Elway here in Denver. Now, if you ask overall, yeah, I'd put him in front of John Elway. If you ask in Indianapolis, Peyton is the best. But here in Denver, I have a hard time putting Peyton ahead of John Elway. The longevity, the 5 Super Bowls, 2 Super Bowl wins, back-to-back, the way he went out on top, John deserves that, Ed. So explain why you put Peyton in front of John.
Well, I'll say this. It was very close. I mean, it's not as though I sat there and went, well, Peyton's running away with this thing, and John's a distant second. It wasn't secretariat in the Belmont.
Right.
So I'll put that out there first. Really, it mainly came down to if I'm drafting a team based on guys that played for the Broncos, and the only thing I know about them is what they did in orange and blue. Peyton Manning's my number one pick. He's the guy I'm going with. He's the guy I want to go to battle with. And I watched every game John Elway played. All 16 years, half of them sitting in my seats at Mile High Stadium. So it's not as though I just, you know, saw some highlights here and there of the guy. I saw every game. Now, I think that gives me some perspective that people with orange-colored glasses don't necessarily have.
Sure.
John Elway had a lot of bad games. I can remember regular season games going down to New Orleans and getting beat 42-0 by a Saints team that was pretty mediocre. Peyton Manning, when he was the Broncos quarterback, I was shocked when they lost the game. Shocked. I expected them to win every single game. And that sounds flippant, but that's not how it goes in the NFL. Like, the NFL is kind of a coin toss league. I mean, try and pick games on a weekly basis. That's about where you're going to end up. So to have a guy on your team who, when he's playing, you're shocked if you don't win the game, that to me is what put it over the top. His numbers are crazy. He had the 3 best passing seasons in the history of the franchise. Not even close. Elway never topped 27 touchdown passes in a year. Different era. But then, you know, people who start arguing with me, it's, well, different era and a conservative coach. And it starts being like, that's a pretty good pile of excuses you got there. I mean, if John was, you know, so great at reading defenses and could do all these things, why did Dan Reeves just say, let's give the ball to Sammy Winder and Gerald Wilhite? See, these are some of the things I think that, you know, revisionists don't want to remember about John of all the people wanting to trade him out of town because he supposedly had no touch pass and no ability to read defense. I listened to these things for a decade. So to me, Peyton Manning would be the number one guy I'd start with and I'd build from there.
Well, let me ask you this. This isn't a scientific approach, but is Peyton Manning a Colt or a Bronco?
He's probably, you know, if it was the Baseball Hall of Fame, if it was Cooperstown, he's going to go in as a Colt.
That's something that is a very simplistic question that Tommy asked me last week, mm-hmm. when I was filling in for the drive, and I just can't bring myself to put someone I deem as a Colt over a Bronco over Mr. Bronco. So look, and as I've prefaced through this whole thing, not one time did we get to your list where I didn't say, this is James Merrillat's opinion, this is one man's opinion. This was your list that we've reacted to. You've stirred up the coals of discussion about a half a dozen times in a legitimate way on this station. So I think for those reasons, I thought you did a great job. We'll agree to disagree who's number one, and that's cool. Reasonable minds can do that. Let me ask you this. Now that you did it and you look back at your list, is there something that you would change after you hear the feedback?
Yeah, I mentioned the TD Gary Zimmerman thing. I probably would have flip-flopped them.
TD at six.
Yeah, I don't think they were grossly off. I probably would put Ed McCaffrey ahead of Eric Decker. I think they were 39 and 45, so they were in the same ballpark. You know, I don't think I would have had John Lynch crack the list. There were a couple other players who didn't
make
it.
How about Brandon Stokley?
I probably would have had Stoke like 59, 60, somewhere in there.
There we go.
But
now you're talking.
Not a ton. I mean, I got the most heat about the beginning of this whole conversation, putting Tebow on at 60. Wouldn't change that at all. I'm probably having to argue that so much since then. I'm probably more adamant about my position. And then the second most I got was having Peyton over John. And I still firmly believe in that. He's the, you know, been watching this team for, I'm 45, so I've been watching it for 45 years, but 40, and he's the greatest player I've ever seen wear the team's uniform, and I'm gonna stand by that.
And you know, you talk about Tim Tebow, I'm with you. I think Tebow deserves to be on the list. It wasn't pretty, but man, that year was something else.
Yeah.
I mean, it was magical.
Yeah.
And so I think you have to take in consideration what he was able to do. Yeah, it was limited, but he found a way to get it done, and that season will never be forgotten if you were in town and a Broncos fan watching that year. So I agree with you. He needs to be on the list somewhere for sure.
It's part of what makes it inexact, though, right? Because not everybody didn't play the exact same number of seasons, the exact same number of games. Some of them came from other teams. Some of them left. Some have injuries. So, you know, Tebow was a supernova. But, man, that 8 weeks was as white hot as you can get. He put Denver Broncos football back on the national map.
And I told you my anecdote. I'm living in Albany, New York at the time. And it was front and center of everything. It was front and center of the local conversation in Albany. As much as it was on SportsCenter, as much as the viral video of kids dropping to a knee and Tebowing.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a phenomenon for a second. And based off impact, which there's no stat for that, which is, and I'm not stroking my partner, but if you could, like, Stoke has a handful of moments here in Denver that everyone will remember forever. The game against Cincinnati, the comeback against the Chargers when he catches that touchdown. So, you know, as much as we've kind of like poked in fun of like, hey, is Stokely going to be on the list? If you're doing like impact moments,
sure,
you could. I think you could make a little case in court. Now you'd lose, but you could make a little case.
You were doing the 60 most memorable plays in Broncos history,
oh my goodness,
those two make the conversation for sure. I would say the Bengals play makes it. The
Bengals play better make it.
The other game had a lot of crazy plays. Your catch was awesome in it, but that game.
I got you. The Bengals play better make it.
They ran one play. I think this.
I'm not laughing.
You ran one play on your side of the 50 that entire game. Like, you guys hadn't done squat.
Right.
And so to pull that game out of, I mean, that game was a loss, and that play, and then, you know, the presence of mind at the end of it to run out the clock, like, that makes the list. Not just because I'm sitting here.
Well, yeah, I hope not.
hitting the ref. That one.
Stop.
On there, too.
I guess. Stop. Actually, my youngest son brought that up again last week.
Did he really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm like, don't worry about it. Stop bringing that up.
Impactful moments. That's
right.
What it's about.
That's right. But also talking about Tebow and that great year that he had, or half a year, whatever it wasn't just the regular season. It culminated in that playoff game here in Denver. The way they won that thing, walk-off was the first play of overtime. I mean, it was like, are you kidding me? So not only did he do it in the regular season and find all these crazy ways that you'll never see ever again, ways to win football games, he culminated that with a playoff victory against the Pittsburgh Steelers here at Mile High.
It's probably the greatest moment in the history of the current building in terms of one play. The guy who was, you know, engineering that, he certainly has to make have a spot on this list, without a doubt.
All right, James Merlett of 1043thefan.com. Before you head out, is there anything that we need to know that's coming up?
Yeah, well, you guys had Cecil on earlier. Cecil's continuing to break down position by position the Broncos team as we get ready for training camp. I mean, deep dives. He's done a ton of research. Obviously, it's easy to talk about the projected starters, but rookies, guys you've never heard of who are on this roster who, you know, in a couple of weeks, they're going to have that moment where they're the big name of camp and people are talking about it. So get an early start on that. And then, starting Wednesday and Thursday, the whole crew will be out there every single day covering training camp from start to finish.
Really looking forward to it. James Merrillat of 1043thefan.com, inspiring a ton of conversation. From a producing of the show standpoint, thank you.
You bet.
Over the last month.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, man, like, some like staples of our rundown have been that. So go check out 1043thefan.com. It's been a great uptick here recently in terms of production. James, thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. I saw a stat over the weekend that you need to hear because the statement has never been made before. I'll tell you exactly what it is, but first, what's up with that Denver snapshot?